Om Ajnanantamina Andasha Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text 46. Yateha deva pravaras. Trividhyam upalabhyate. Bhuteshu gunavai chitrat. Tata nyantra numiyate. Yateha deva pravaras. Trividhyam upalabhyate. Bhuteshu gunavai chitrat. Tata nyantra numiyate. Yateha deva pravaras trividhyam upalabhyate bhuteshu gunavaichitrat tata nyantra numiyate. Yateha deva pravaras trividhyam upalabhyate Bhuteshu gunavai chitrat Tata nyatra numiyate. Yata, just as, iha, in this life, deva pravara, O best of the demigods, trividhyam, three kinds of attributes, upalabhyate, are achieved, among all living entities, guna vaichitrat, because of the diversity of the contamination by the three modes of nature. Tata, similarly, anyatra, in other places, anumiyate, it is inferred. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. O best of the demigods, we can see three different varieties of life, which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. The living entities are thus known as peaceful, restless, and foolish, as happy, unhappy, or in between, or as religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life, these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. Did you find them? Purport. The actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature are visible in this life. For example, some people are very happy. That's in the mode of goodness. Some are very distressed. That's in the mode of passion and ignorance. And some are in mixed happiness and distress. I think that's supposed to be passion. This is the result of past association with the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Since these varieties are visible in this life, we may assume that the living entity is according to their association with the different modes of material nature, will be happy, distressed, or between the two in their next lives also. Therefore, the best policy is to disassociate oneself from the three modes of material nature and be always transcendental to their contamination. This is possible only when one fully engages in the devotional service of the Lord, as Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, verse 26, Mam chayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samititayitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Quote, one who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down under any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the spiritual platform. End of the quote. Unless one is fully absorbed in the service of the Lord, one is subject to the contamination of the three modes of material nature and must therefore suffer from distress or mix happiness and distress. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So the Yamadutas are responding to the questions of the Vishnu Dutas. The questions of the Vishnu Dutas are five. Basically, there were about five questions the Vishnu Dutas asked. The first question is, what is dharma and how do you measure it? That's the first question. And in that question also was implied, what is adharma and how do you measure that? Got it? That was the first question. Second question was, it's not exactly in right order, but these were the questions. Second question was, who is punished? Who is punished? Third question, why are they punished? Fourth question, what is the scope of punishment? Is everyone liable to punishment or only some liable to punishment? What is the scope of punishment? And fifth question, how is punishment administered? Understand? These five questions. What are the five questions? Can you play back? What is dharma and? There's some other nuance to that. How do you measure it? How do you measure it? And the flip side. Okay, so second question, another one. Who is to be punished? Why is he punished? Yeah, what is the scope? Is everyone punished or only some people punished? What is the scope of punishment? Eh? That was already mentioned. How is punishment administered? Understand? Five questions were answered. So in the verses that were covered yesterday by Acharya Nishtha, they basically answered those questions. Dharma is what? That which is in the Vedas is dharma. And then dharma is measured by the extent one follows the Vedas. That's how it's measured. And then the converse is, adharma is that which is not in the Vedas, or that which transgresses the Vedas is a dharma. And you measure that to the extent they're doing things which are not mentioned in the Vedas. That's the answer to question number one. They gave the answer. It was detailed. I'm not going to go through all of those details right now. But it was discussed yesterday. Well, whatever, if there's any benefit whatsoever, because they follow for their sense gratification. That's another thing, we're not going to get into that. So then, second question, who is punished? Why are people punished? Because they transgress the Vedas. There's some adharma. And that adharma is being witnessed by so many people. That was also mentioned. So, who is punished? Those who transgress the Vedas. And why are they punished? Because there are so many witnesses who see them break the Vedas, and so they administer punishment. Particularly Yamaraj, that was covered. And then, what is the scope of punishment? Everyone liable to punishment. That was answered. Because everyone is under the influence of the modes of material nature. So everyone is going to be doing something sinful at some point. So everyone is liable to punishment. And how is punishment administered? According to, that was the last verse in the series yesterday. According to the degree of adharma, to that degree they are punished like that. Understand? So they answered those questions, five questions. Now, in this next series of verses that are coming up, they're giving a general understanding how one may understand what is taking place in the material nature. They've answered their specific questions. Now they're giving like an overall synopsis of how one can understand what is taking place in the material nature. Understand? Simple. So in today's verse, what is being discussed is that they're saying anumiyate. Anumiyate means an inference. You can infer. So there's conjecture. There's conjecture also, and even in spiritual circles, But that conjecture is based on solid principles of understanding that one derives from the Shastras. Understanding. It's not just like a wild speculation, but the conjecture is based on understanding the material nature and other various tattvas which are described in the Shastras. Understand? So there's conjecture. Conjecture means inference. So they're saying here that just as we can see in this life, guna vaichitra, there is contamination of the modes of nature. The divinities are contaminated by the modes of nature. And because of that contamination, the bhuteshu, the living entities, they are found to be in three sorts of conditions. Trividyam upalabhyate. They achieve or are found to be in three sorts of conditions according to the contamination of the modes of material nature. One is they're sometimes happy. That's when there's an influence of goodness. They are very distressed. That's passion too, but you could say ignorance. And there's mixed happiness and distress, passion. There's religion when people are influenced by goodness. There's irreligion when there's ignorance. And there's semi-religion, mixed religion, irreligion when there's passion. And so on. So in this way, because of the contamination of the three modes of material nature, guna vaichitra, bhuteshu, the living entities, are trividyam upalapyate. They are found to be in three different conditions in this life. So by seeing that now, then you can anumiyate, you can infer that in the future the same thing will be taking place. That you'll see the same types of living entities, those that are happy, those that are distressed, those that are mixed, those who are religious, those who are irreligious, those who are mixed, etc. Does it make sense? That's the simple point that they're making. So you can infer that, just like we're seeing now so many living entities, some environments you can see, you have like the Wicker Park. Wicker Park is an interesting place because all the modes in nature are like all assembled in one spot, and you can see everything in one spot. Yuppies, gothic, gangs, all sorts of stuff in one spot. So same as Belmont. And you can see some places like the suburbs, it has a predominance of whatever mode, usually ignorance, but it looks nice at least, so that's like goodness. So just as you see these types of environments now, you can infer that in the future you'll see similar types of environments. That are some environments very passionate, some ignorant, some goodness. Just as you're seeing that now, you can infer the same thing in the future for living entities. That's the simple point they're making here. And that way, this is a general conceptualization how you can understand who can be punished. Because then those who are in the mode of ignorance, they'll do ignorant things, they're liable to punishment. This is a general way you can understand. So then in Prabhupada's purport, he explains this, and then he concludes the purport by saying that, so the best policy is to get out of the modes of material nature. Because we're not in control of the modes, we're under the control of the modes. So we will find ourselves in these various conditions in life, always. Even if someone is predominantly in the mode of goodness, sometimes there will be passion, sometimes there will be ignorance. Under the influence of certain circumstances they encounter in the modes of material nature. So if you want to get out of the range of punishment, the point is that you will be punished at some point because you will do something foolish because we're controlled by the modes of nature. So if you want to get out of that, the best policy really is to transcend the modes of nature. That's the best policy. Sometimes certain followers of the materialistic portion of the Vedas may think that I'll live a pious life, I'll go to Swarga and enjoy it, come down, and then do the same thing over again like this. And that way I can have a perpetual life of enjoyment. Sometimes one thinks in this way. But the reality is that you're not in control of the modes of nature, and they won't always allow you to be pious. Or even if you try to be pious, the nature of material existence is quite bewildering. So inadvertently, you will do something that's impious, that's passionate, that's ignorant, and then you'll be liable to punishment. You'll have to experience the consequences of your foolish actions. So therefore, if you want freedom from all this chance, because there's a chance you will be punished, it's basically guaranteed. You want to be free from that? Then you should transcend the modes of material nature. That can only be done by bhakti, Srila Prabhupada says, only by bhakti. Not Srila Prabhupada, Krishna says, mam cha yo avyabhicharena. Bhakti yogena sevate, only by avyabhicharena bhakti, fixed devotional service to the Lord, saguna samatita. Then you can jump over the Veda, the modes of material nature, attain the transcendental platform where there is no chance of being punished. Otherwise, you have to be punished. Yes. Understand this point? Terence G, understand? So then an example of this is given in the next verse. I'll take the question after the next verse, because this is an analogy to explain the same point. Vartamano anyayo kalo bolo. Guna bhikna poko yata. Evam janmanya yor etad. Dharma dharma nidharshanam. Okay, so translation, just as springtime and the present indicates the nature of springtime in the past and future. So this life of happiness, distress, or mixture of both gives evidence concerning the religious and irreligious activities on one's past and future lives. There's an example of the same point. Purport, our past and future are not very difficult to understand. For time is under the contamination of the three modes of material nature. Such a beautiful point. So it means if you understand the modes of nature, because time is contaminated by the modes of nature, you can understand something about your past and future. Because time is itself under the contamination of the modes. So if you understand the modes of nature, you can understand something about your past and your future. That's such a nice sentence. Our past and future are not very difficult to understand, for time is under the contamination of the three modes of material nature. As soon as spring arrives, the usual exhibition of various types of fruits and flowers automatically become manifest, and therefore, we may conclude that spring in the past was adorned with similar fruits and flowers, and will be so adorned in the future also. Our repetition of birth and death is taking place within time, and according to the influence of the modes of nature, we are receiving various types of bodies and being subjected to various conditions. Understand? So this is an example of this verse. So we can understand something about our past and future by looking at our present mentality. Understand? By our present mentality, we understand something about how we were in the past life, and we can understand something about what we're going to be like in the future if we continue on with such mentalities. Understand? So if someone has bad attitude problem this life, that means last life bad attitude problem is carried over, and therefore it's stuck in their subtle body. And therefore, they're having such attitude. Someone is having very mild, gentle attitude, like Advaita Charan Prabhu, very mild. Even if you scream at him at the top of your lungs, he'll say, "I'm sorry, Prabhu." Immediately he'll pacify you just by his face, the gentleness in his face, even if you're furious. Then you can understand, in the past, he was also something like that. There was some influence of that mentality. It's stuck in his subtle body. And so you're having a gentle personality. And similarly, if you see someone is just, really loud, obnoxious sort of personality, so you understand something about the past. You know, the details may not be known. That's not important, really. But you can understand this is something he was like in the past. And of course, if persons continue on with such mentalities now, then you can understand what their future will be like that. So the idea is that by seeing the extent of dharma and adharma now, we can understand the extent of dharma and adharma previously and the extent of dharma and adharma that will be there in the future. Just like in the springtime, by seeing the spring, you can understand what spring was like in the past and you can understand what spring will be like in the future. So in other words, it's not very difficult to make an educated guess. You know, you may not know the details, but it's not beyond the scope of an educated guess to infer what things were like for individuals in the past and what things will be like for individuals in the future. Anumiyate, you can infer that. Because if you understand this topic of the modes of nature, you can easily infer that. Understand? Any questions about these things? Yeah, same sort of, right. So then we'll sometimes hear like the acharyas are tree-colored, yeah. And that's because they follow the Vedas. And in fact, I think that's going to come up in one of the purports, in fact. I think it comes up. So yeah, because they know the modes, and they know these tattvas from the shastras, so therefore they're tree-colored, yeah, they can understand. And then people are doing things in passion and ignorance and so on. And so when they meet a sadhu can tell them, you were like this, this, this. And they're like, wow, how do you know that? They think the sadhu has mystic powers. But really he just has knowledge. And you can see, you're in the modes of passionate ignorance. And he knows what type of subjective experience that engenders. So then he's saying, you're experiencing this, you're doing like this, you're like, they're like, wow, this guy is like totally mystical. And in a sense it is, it's mystical knowledge, you know. And so just by understanding the topic of the modes of nature, you can understand something about your life. your conditioned life, that is. Yeah.
My question has to do with Rupa Goswami says that we're like crystals and we take on the color of those that we associate with. Yeah. So it seems like in this analysis...
Actually, that was in Hrinayakashipu.
Hrinayakashipu said that.
Yeah. He quotes that verse in BRS, and it's a quote of Hrinayakashipu.
Oh, okay.
And very learned.
Yeah, evidently. So I was just thinking this analysis, it kind of excludes association because
no, it doesn't.
Or maybe it doesn't. And well, then I have a second question.
The point is that, like I mentioned yesterday, that the Yamadutras are not dealing with transcendental principles here. And they are talking about association with the multi-material nature. Pakriti purusho sto hi bungte pakriti janguna karanam guna sangosya sarasa yuni jamasu. So it's not devoid of association. It's association with the multi-material nature. But they're not talking about transcendental association or anything transcendental in their analysis. And that was the point that they missed. That's why they made a mistake. So they've covered that point in their explanation. That's what they're saying. So therefore, everyone's liable to punishment because no one can stay fixed in any one mode in the material world. As long as they're associating with the modes of nature, then sometimes they will be in goodness, sometimes they will be in passion, sometimes they'll be in ignorance, and they will get the result of their association with the modes of nature. Karanam guna sangosya sarasa yoni jamasu. Sometimes rising up to the heavenly planets, sometimes remaining on earth in passion, sometimes going down in the animal species in ignorance, and so on. And it repeats, and it repeats, and it repeats.
Wondering, just a quick second question. I was also wondering if you found anything else about the question you asked Maharaj about how, since human life begins with Varnashram, then if everyone's under the modes of nature, they're not really false, so then are they even liable to punishment? Because according to this, it seems that they are. But it was a really nice point you made, so I was wondering if you found out anything else about that.
Well, as a general point, of course they're liable to punishment, because that's what they've answered the question. To the extent that there's a dharma in a person's life, to that extent they will have to be punished. And although a lot of the hells we did hear about were in relationship to breaking rules of Varnashram, it goes to follow that, because no one's following rules of Varnashram, that they will be liable to punishment. Now, that chapter explained that according to the degree of Tamagun, to that degree they'll be punished. So, yes, people have to go to hell, potentially, most probably. Highly likely, because of according to the extent of adharma. So if someone's just doing some adharma out of just sheer ignorance, they're not atheistic and so on, then the punishment will be less. They might take birth again on the earth planet. Because again, it's not like people are just exclusively in the mode of ignorance. Those who do like really heavy crimes, like let's say genocide, that's deep ignorance, so they have to be punished severely. But most people there's a mixture in their life. It's not like they're like heavy Tamagun. A lot of people on the earth planet is a lot of passion, actually, and just, you know, activity and all sorts of things. Of course, the general atmosphere is ignorance, and ignorant activities are going on and so on. But because there's a general mixture, all of that has to be taken together, and then a suitable punishment is given in the form of another body in the Kali Yuga, for example, on the earth planet, which is not suitable for anything but suffering. And so on. You know, they may not go to hell, but they continue on in birth in the material world. So in one sense, it hardly makes any difference, because we experience our suffering, even in earth bodies, to be hellish, you know. An example that I like to give is when someone breaks up with the spouse or the loved one or the girlfriend or whatever. And that's practically like hell, you know. If you were to ask them to give expression to how they're feeling, basically, they would describe like a hellish situation that you might find in the 26th chapter of the 5th canto, you know, in terms of experientially how they're taking it. So the point is that experientially, the whole material world is hellish. Experientially, the whole thing is hellish. So in that sense, it doesn't really make a difference. But to be real technical about it, you know, if to the degree of goodness, you're elevated accordingly. To the degree of ignorance, you're downgraded. Passion, you stay in the middle, like that. That's being a little bit more technical. But overall, the whole place is miserable. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. Anityam asukam lokam. Krishna says the whole world is anityam asukam, temporary, unhappy place. Imam prapya bhajaswamam, therefore worship me, get out of this place, you know, if you got any brains. You wanted to say something?
I think in the previous text it mentioned that those who follow the Vedas, those who do not follow the Vedas are punishable. Mm-hmm. The Vedas is the determining factor, right? Mm-hmm. So, those who perform pious activity, they're following the Vedas, then but they're also saying everyone is punishable. So how is it that if they're acting piously according to the Vedas?
No, so we covered that, because no one can exclusively act piously all the time because they're under the influence of the modes of nature. So their point is that as long as you're associating with the modes, sometimes there's going to be some passionate act, sometimes there's going to be some ignorant act, even inadvertently, like in the case of Dasharat accidentally killing someone like a sage because he's taken on the form of a deer and whoever, or Pandu, whoever it was. And so in that way, you can't exclusively stay in any one situation perfectly in the material world. The modes of nature don't allow you to. So in that way, the scope of punishment extends to everyone who's anyone associated with the modes of nature will be punishable at some point. So that's their point. As long as you're following Dharma, you're okay. But isn't
even performing pious activity, that's also sinful activity in one sense, because it may not be
that's
direct,
in a transcendental
pure devotional
sense. That's our pure devotional eye, which is real, you know, heavy. The pure devotional eye, you know, someone's doing some good welfare activity, that is rascal dome, you know, and everyone's pissed at us because we think like that. We may even say like that in the public arena. They said someone is doing, so they're feeding people, they're clothing people, and that is all nonsense. Of course, we may not say like that to their face, but we have a tendency to think like that, because that pure devotional eye leaves very little room for anything that's not connected to Krishna. It leaves very little room for appreciation of things that's not really connected to Krishna. In a very general sort of sense, like Krishna says in chapter 12, you can't do this, do that, you can't do that. So there's scope for philanthropy within that section of Bhagavad Gita. And so within that scope, a devotee may also like kind of appreciate it, especially so he doesn't irritate the sensibilities of people who are attached to the modes of nature. But in the pure devotional sense, or in the spiritual sense, it doesn't really matter, because it's all relative. You know, so someone is doing something in the mode of goodness, that's okay, fantastic, but you still have to remain in the material world. Only if you connect that mode of goodness to transcendence does the goodness have any value. We've given an example, it's given in the Bhagavatam, that it's just like going to the airport, but if you never get on the airplane, then what was the use of going to the airport? So mode of goodness is like that. Mode of goodness is like going to the airport. But if you don't get on the airplane, if you don't transcend, if you don't take help of goodness to transcend, then it's just another mode of nature. Nothing special about it so much.
This is just bringing up another question, that we understand that Shuddhasattva is the pure mode of goodness, uncontaminated by other modes. So isn't a proportionate increase, because Shuddhasattva is the nature of pure goodness, so even if one's accumulating goodness, isn't that a great positive benefit for them?
If they connect it to the absolute plane, yes.
But the absolute plane is nothing but the pure mode of goodness.
Yeah, so they, in other words, they should be increased. They're taking help on the mode of goodness to come to the platform where goodness is devoid of passion and ignorance, Shuddhasattva. If they don't do that, then it's just relative. It doesn't really make any difference. Because as long as you remain in the material world, if you're not connecting to transcendence, then it's only a matter of time before goodness degrades to passion, degrades to ignorance. Like this. So it's like goodness is giving you an opportunity, but if you don't take the opportunity, then it's just another mode of nature. It's relative. What difference does it make? It's like for people who don't believe in God and an afterlife and so on, then what difference does it make if you're a good person? I mean, really, what difference does it make? Everything's going to be finished at the end. We all die. We all get nothing. All our efforts will be forgotten within a few years and so on, or a few generations, however long it may take. Well, that's because we accept a next life. I'm talking about persons who don't accept the reality of the soul being different from the body, of transmigration of the soul. They don't accept God and so on. Then they're hard-pressed to say what's the value of anything that anyone is doing. And whatever value they're giving to it is all arbitrary. It's just relative, as they oftentimes like to argue also. So there is no actual inherent purpose to existence. It's really all arbitrary. So also, for persons who are under the mold of material nature, that's true, actually. Although goodness, relatively speaking, is better in a lot of ways than passion and ignorance, but if you don't get out of the material world, then it's, you know, what difference does it really make? It doesn't make any difference. Then soon you will be in the same place where you're criticizing others for being. You will also end up eventually in that place by the lower molds like that. So who else? Alex Peru, did you want to say something? No. Any other question, comment? No? Okay, so I'm going to read on a little bit more here since it's a little early. So yeah, because the next verse connects to this also. The next two verses are it's a further explanation of the same thing. So it mentions here, Manasaiva Pure Deva Purva Rupam Vipashyati Anumi Mamsate Purvam Apurvam Manasa Bhagavanaja. The omnipotent Yamaraj is as good as Lord Brahma, for while situated in his own abode or in everyone's heart like the Paramatma, he mentally observes the past activities of a living entity, and thus understands how the living entity will act in future lives. Purport, one should not consider Yamaraj an ordinary living being. He is as good as Lord Brahma. He has the complete cooperation of the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. And therefore, by the grace of the Super Soul, he can see the past, present, and future of a living being from within. The word anumi mam sate means that he can decide in consultation with the Super Soul. Anu means following. The actual decisions concerning the next lives of the living entities are made by the Super Soul, and they are carried out by Yamaraj. Anumi mam sate. So the point here they're making in relationship to these points, they said here you can infer, anumiyate, you can make an inference what's going to happen to living entities in the future. But here they're saying Yamaraj knows for sure because he's been empowered by the Super Soul. So Yamaraj, he actually knows specifically what living entities are like and what is the extent of Dharma and Dharma in them, and therefore he specifically knows what situations they deserve. So although we can make an inference by observation, he specifically knows because he's been empowered by the Super Soul. And Prabhupada gives special importance to the word anumimamsate, which means he considers, anu means to follow. So following the inspiration of Super Soul, he can understand exactly what's going on. And then he carries it out. He carries out the situation of the living entity according to the direction of the Super Soul. That's Yamaraj. So he's very special living entity. Any question about that? Yeah.
Is that similar to the guru's capability that he's, because he's in touch with Super Soul, he's aware of all of the activities of the disciple? Can you explain that?
Well, Prabhupada, I think, when asked this question, first of all, we should know the spiritual master is not omniscient. I repeat, the spiritual master is not omniscient. I repeat, the spiritual master is not omniscient. He's empowered. And he when Prabhupada was asked this question about does the spiritual master know everything, Prabhupada said in one instance, I know what Super Soul or God wants me to know. That much I know. So yes, the spiritual master can be empowered to understand what's going on with the disciple because he's empowered by the Super Soul. He is a representation of the Super Soul in our hearts. So he, the bona fide guru, can be empowered to know these things. At another point, Prabhupada, he writes actually, I think in the sixth canto, in fact, that the spiritual master is given unlimited intelligence to direct and guide the disciple. That doesn't mean he knows everything. It means he's gifted by the Super Soul unlimited intelligence to do so. And a lot of that has to do with the faith of the disciple also, that when he sees the guru and when he hears from his guru specifically, he hears the delegation of Krishna. He doesn't just hear some jiva speaking to him, but rather he hears a delegation of the Super Soul or of Krishna speaking to him. So in other words, the disciple has to also understand that tattva, the guru tattva, and subsequently have that faith in his guru, by which he can take inspiration that the guru knows what's best for me. Just like we were reading about the principles of Sharanagati the other night. The other day, a few of us were reading. And one of the, there's six angas of Sharanagati, really five angas and one angi, ho, but out of those six, one of them is to have firm faith in the Lord's protection. And the verse that Jiva Goswami gives for that is that the Supreme Lord, who is the master of the three worlds and the controller of the modes of nature, knows what is best for me. It's a verse from the Bhagavatam. That's the verse that is given for having full faith in the Lord's protection, that he knows what is best for me. So it's interesting because the question came out, well, how do we know the Lord is protecting us? You know, we see devotees take up devotional service and it seems like so many bad things are happening to them. How do we know the Lord? But then that's not what it means to have faith in his protection. To have faith in his protection is to have faith that the Lord knows what's best for me. So that way, anything that's happening in the environment, a surrendered devotee has this understanding that the Lord knows what is best. He's in control of the environment. It's what's best for me. So also seeing that the guru is representing that personality of Godhead, then the faith of the disciple, knowing that his spiritual master's words is what's best for me, will have a lot to do with his understanding that the guru has unlimited intelligence to guide him. If he doesn't have faith, then he'll always be questioning. That doesn't mean he shouldn't ask questions when there are genuine doubts, but if he doesn't have the faith in the position of guru, the guru tattva, he does not understand, then that will create obstacles in his actual ability to perceive his guru transcendentally and to have faith in when he speaks to him. So that's also another principle that's at play. But the guru is not omniscient, yeah.
Yamaduta, the agents, they come from the hellish planets. Have you checked? You're going to check something about
that? Yeah, I didn't get time to look that up. I couldn't find other things also. I found the same quote in like many different things. That was my internet search. So I'm going to have to listen to this Bhaktivedanta Purnamaraj class. He gave a little bit more details. All the other places I was finding, they were just quoting the same verse from the Garuda Purana, which I read yesterday. Okay, any other question about this or anything? This one was simple point. Yamaraj, he knows what's up. That's the essence of this. That's it? Good? All right, I'll try one more verse here because it's in connection. It's to the point here. Text 49. Yataknas tamasa yukta upaste vyaktam evahi naveda purvam aparam Narshta Janma Shmriti Stuta. We're going to do the word-to-word meaning here because I'm going to look at this. Yata, just as Agya, an ignorant living being, Tamasa, in sleep, Yukta, engaged, Upaste, acts according to Vyaktam, a body manifested in a dream. Eva, certainly, he, indeed, Naveda, does not know, Purvam, the past body, Aparam, the next body, Nashta, lost, Janma Smriti, the remembrance of birth, Tata, similarly. Okay, this makes sense. Translation, as a sleeping person acts according to the body manifested in his dreams, and accepts it to be himself, someone identifies with his present body, which he acquired because of his past religious or irreligious actions, and is unable to know his past or future lives. This is a fascinating point. It's a long purport, actually. The point that's being made here is, why don't people enjoy sinful activity? This is what's being answered here. And why is it that people don't avoid sinful activity? If you can understand anumiyate, if you can infer, you know, how you're contaminated by the modes of nature, and you can understand what types of modes are going to lead you to a negative place, then the question's coming out, why don't people try to get out of this situation? And there's a reason that's being given here. So the reason is being given here, just as yata agya tamasa yukta. So just like a person who's Upaste vyaknam, he's sleeping. And he has a, he's sleeping. Yes, it says here. This is a person who is sleeping. When he has a dream body, he forgets about his waking body. Isn't it? We have experience. When you're dreaming, unless it's a lucid dream, when you're dreaming, you forget about your waking body. And so you act according to the dream body, because you've completely forgotten about the waking body, and so on. So you just act according to that conception of the dream body, completely in ignorance of that you have another body, another life, and so on. So similarly, what happens, tata, what happens is that when the living entity takes birth again, nashta jama shmriti, when he takes birth again, he nashta shmriti, his remembrance is lost of all this previous accumulated knowledge, previous understanding of the activities that led to suffering and so on. And he just acts according to the new body that he's gotten. So he's just like an animal, you know, an animal would never think to get out of sinful life. Of course, he doesn't commit sinful life, but he would never think to transcend it because he's just absorbed in that particular body. And so the desires of that body, the impressions of that body, they take over his whole life. So similarly, when you take birth, you forget about what you've done in the past. You don't have, and if you don't have transcendental knowledge, then you're just acting according to that body that you have. And therefore, it so happens that people never try to transcend it. There's no chance for unless you're getting transcendental knowledge, right? That's the point that's being made here. So agyatamasa, they're in ignorance on account, just like you're in ignorance when you sleep and you take on a dream body. Does it make sense? That's the point that's being made here. Now the purport. Let's see how Srila Prabhupada enlightens us here. A man engages in sinful activities because he does not know what he did in his past life to get his present materially conditioned body. See? Prabhupada. Which is subjected to the threefold miseries. As stated by Rishabhdev in Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 5, verse 4, Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarma. A human being who is mad after sense gratification does not hesitate to act sinfully. Yes. Yarindriya Pritaya Prinoti. He performs sinful actions simply for sense gratification. Indriya Priti. He loves sense gratification. Yes. Nasadu Manye. This is not good. This is not sadhu. Not good. This is not good. Yata atmano yam asana pikleshadasadeya. Because of such sinful actions, one receives another body and which will suffer as he is suffering in his present body because of his past sinful activities. Understand? So the divinity, nunam pramata kuruta, he's crazy. Once he gets in that body conception of life, you become insane. There's no option but to be insane. It's like bringing a kid to a candy store, you know, and then telling him to be peaceful. Be sober, you know. When it's or a toy store, especially toy store is just intoxicating. Your parents ever take you to like a Toys R Us or something when you're a kid? It was so intoxicating, you know, the potential that was there to have and enjoy so many things. So similarly, the living entity has senses and he has R Us, so to speak, this material world of sense objects. Sense objects are us. Yeah, that's funny. No one's laughing. That's good. Sense objects are us. That's what we're in. We have these senses, and sense objects are us, completely surrounding us. And so, naturally, the entity goes crazy. Just like the kid goes crazy in Toys R Us. Okay, now it's time to go. No! Like, suppose he's in the middle of trying out the new video game. They allow you to play for free or something. Then the mother says, it's time to go. No, I don't want to go. And she drags him. He starts making a hoop and holler and so on. So similarly, this is the same situation. We're quite childlike, actually. Same situation. We have these senses wherein sense objects are us, and we're mad after sense gratification. That is our only lot, actually. We must go mad after sense gratification. Therefore, we don't think to transcend it. We're so absorbed in the bodily concept, nashta janma shmriti, that we don't think to get out of this situation also. This is the kid thinks, this is great. There's no reason to leave. This is awesome. Why would I want to go? Give me one good reason why I want to go. You have to eat. That is not good enough. You know, the kid, he will think like he's insane. He's intoxicated.
They say the purpose of the material world is rectification of the jiva. So, but it seems like according to the, you know, it just seems our very existence in the material world is condemning us. Maybe yes. That's just in Kali Yuga. Maybe
no,
in other yugas it was
general. Sort of... You need sadhu sangha. So that's always the operative point. So the next paragraph. It should be understood that a person who does not have Vedic knowledge, that's the point, how you get Vedic knowledge, someone has to speak it to you, right? Always acts in ignorance of what he has done in the past, what he is doing at the present, and how he will suffer in the future. Very nice sentence. He doesn't know what he did in the past to get this body. He doesn't even know what he's doing in this body. He's just speculating. And doesn't know how he will suffer in the future. He is completely in darkness. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is tamasi ma, don't remain in darkness, jyotir gama, try to go to the light. The light or illumination is Vedic knowledge, which one can understand when he is elevated to the mode of goodness or when he transcends the mode of goodness by engaging in devotional service to the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord. This is described in the Shetashvatara Upanishad, yasya deva para bhaktir yata deva tata gurau tasya ite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Quote, unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. End quote. The Vedas enjoin, takvidanartam sagurum eva bigat chet. One must approach a spiritual master who has full knowledge of the Vedas and be faithfully directed by him in order to become a devotee of the Lord. Then the knowledge of the Vedas will be revealed. When the Vedic knowledge is revealed, one need no longer remain in the darkness of material nature. So, tamasi ma jyotirgama, don't remain in darkness, this insane life of trying to enjoy sense objects or us. Get out. How you will get out, though? Jyotirgama, where is that? What is that light? That is Vedic knowledge. Who will speak that Vedic knowledge to you? Some sadhu, guru, has to speak it to you. So when you hear from the guru, you follow his injunctions, that is called moving towards the light. Then you can get out of this insanity. Otherwise, all of us are suffering from a psychosis, actually. But I guess because everyone is crazy, we think it's normal. I often joke like this. Once a young man was coming here. He was from a mental institution. I didn't know that. I knew he was a little off, but I thought I was being merciful. He invited me to his home. And so I went there, a place on Bryn Mawr, just nearby. So I went there, and when I walked in, it was a crazy, crazy house. And I walked in, and the dhoti and all these things. And so he said, wait here, I have to go and get permission for you to come upstairs and all these things. I didn't even know if I wanted permission at that point. So I went into a lobby room to sit down, where a lot of the patients were there just sitting around. And they were all looking at me and whispering, because I had tilak on and dhoti. They were looking at me like I was crazy, you know. And I was like, I'm not the one that's stuck up in this place, you know. But they were seeing that I am crazy, because everyone in that place was crazy. And so I came in, I was like a little bit the odd one, the oddball out. So similarly, because everyone in the material world is crazy after sense enjoyment. And that seems like the normal condition. So anyone says, actually, you should stop this sense gratification. What is wrong with this fellow? What type of nonsense is they think like that? What are you speaking? Sense gratification will make you unhappy. I just had some pizza last night, and it was great. You know, and that's what they're thinking. And they think that we're crazy. Of course, that is natural, because tamasi ma, the darkness of ignorance is such. But when you get knowledge from the spiritual master, you follow that, then you come out of darkness. You see, you can see the insanity of it all, which you may have inferred, but which becomes crystal clear after hearing from the spiritual master. You can see the insanity of material existence. As they say, as I think Einstein's quoted for saying, insanity means doing the same thing in the same way and expecting a different result. So that's what we're doing in the material world, the same sense gratification program, in the same way, with the same senses and so on, and expecting that we're going to get happiness out of that. That's insanity. But you have to hear that from a guru, and it takes some while to get purified of the psychosis. Got to take a lot of medicine. The medicine of hearing. This medicine. You have to hear with your ears. Then if you take that medicine, then gradually the psychosis goes down. Otherwise, it does not go away. Then you get out of the material world. Otherwise, you cannot get out. So that's the second paragraph Prabhupada's putting out. So continuing on here, according to his association with the material modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, a living entity gets a particular type of body. The example of one who associates with the modes of goodness is a qualified brahmana. Such a brahmana knows past, present, and future because he consults the Vedic literature. See, I knew it came up somewhere. Such a brahmana knows past, present, and future because he consults the Vedic literature and sees through the eyes of shastra. Shastra Chakshu, He can understand what his past life was, why he is in the present body, and how he can obtain liberation from the clutches of Maya and not accept another material body. This is all possible when one is situated in the mode of goodness. Generally, however, the living entities are engrossed in the modes of passion and ignorance. So this point is there. By hearing from the Guru, you gradually coming up through the modes of nature. Then you get goodness. In goodness, you start to understand things. You start to become a little detached. That helps you to focus on the absolute. You start to transcend. In any case, one receives an inferior or superior body at the discretion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the previous verse. Manasaiva pure deva purvam rupam vipashyati anumimamsate apurvam manasa bhagavanaja. Previous verse. How Yamaraj is knowing. Super soul, ultimately, he is the one who is knowing. He's giving us bodies. Everything depends on Bhagavan or Aja, the unborn. Why doesn't one please Bhagavan to receive a better body? That's a good question. Why not? The answer is agyastamasa in this verse, because of gross ignorance. They do not know. One who is in complete darkness cannot know what his past life was or what his next life will be. He is simply interested in his present body. Even though he has a human body, a person in the mode of ignorance and interested only in his present body is like an animal. For an animal, one who is in complete darkness cannot know what his past life was or what his next life will be. He is simply interested in his present body. Even though he has a human body, a person in the mode of ignorance and interested only in his present body is like an animal. For an animal, being covered by ignorance, thinks that the ultimate goal of life and happiness is to eat as much as possible. A human being must be educated to understand his past life and how he can endeavor for a better life in the future. There is even a book called Bhrigu Samhita, which reveals information about one's past, present, and future lives according to astrological calculations. Somehow or other, one must be enlightened about his past, present, and future. One who is interested only in his present body and who tries to enjoy his senses to the fullest extent is understood to be engrossed in the mode of ignorance. His future is very, very dark. Indeed, the future is always dark from one who is grossly covered by ignorance. Especially in this age, human society is covered by the mode of ignorance, and therefore everyone thinks his present body to be everything without consideration of the past or future. So, same point. Prabhupada just reiterated the same point over. We're just like animals. Animals do not have the capacity to even think, to even question beyond their present body. So then, similarly, humans who don't understand, they're also agyatamasa. They're engrossed in their present bodies. This present body is everything. Pleasing my family members in this life is everything. Pleasing my society, this is everything. You know, satisfying my senses now, this is everything. Then they're just like an animal, basically. And whose goal of life is to eat as much as possible. And humans, we do it in a better, so-called more sophisticated way. Although we spend a lot of money for that. There's so many restaurants and similar other things that generally the principle is actually derived around sex life. So there's gyms for working out, not to stay healthy, but to look good, be swole, and sculpt it. So you can, in summertime, you can take your shirt off and clothes off and attract other living entities. Everything's just about this present life. And this is due to being in ignorance. We're all born into ignorance, completely controlled by impressions from our previous existence. So completely bewildered. We're just going on like animals. So unless one gets the mercy of spiritual master, then this is his lot. Continue in the modes of nature, then he will be subject to punishment. He will do sinful things, he will go down. And Prabhupada is saying here, especially in the age of Kali, it is like this. So much ignorance is there. Everything is about just what's happening right now. Even couples, like even within this life, couples come together and it's all about the romance right now. They don't think long term. Like, do I actually like this person? Will I actually be able to live with this person? All those things are not considered. It's just all about the moment, right? Be here now. All about the right now. And so absorbed in the present. They don't think about past. They don't think about the future. Past, they may have had heartbreak. And they don't think about that. They don't think about the future. All they're thinking is right now, we're in love. And that's just carpe diem. You know, I think that was a carpe diem, like capture. What is it? Seize the day. And okay, fine. Seize the day and suffer. You forgot to add the extra part to it. Seize the day and suffer. And so that, of course, goes on. That is our life until we hear from enlightened personalities. There's no scope beyond that. So in this way, the Yamadutsas are describing material existence. Yeah.
About, just quote-unquote falling in love and not thinking about the past or the future is something that even devotees fall victim to. It seems like this is not a very easy thing to realize.
Yeah, because we have an emotional material nature. So it's not like this knowledge doesn't apply to us. In fact, after Krishna speaks about, he has spoken about yoga psychology in chapter 1 through 6. He's spoken about yoga theology in chapters 7 through 12. And then after that, he goes and gets to chapter 14 and says, this is better than all I've spoken so far. How important it is to understand the most material nature. So even for transcendentalists, we are being impelled, aspiring transcendentalists, sadhakas, we're being impelled by the most material nature. So of course we fall into these same traps. Why not? As long as we've not transcended, we also subject it. Therefore it says, Atmo Pamina Sarva, the highest yogi, Yogi Paramamata, Krishna's opinion that the highest yogi is one who can understand the happiness and distress of others by dint of his own experience. So he knows what it's like to be under the influence of the modes of nature. He knows what it's like to be a victim of his imaginations. I shared this before also from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. This is totally not, it's not fully mundane, but the story is mundane, but it has a good message. Many of you may have also watched this show. It was a funny show. They had really some cool true points in it. So in this one episode, the main protagonist of the story is Will Smith, the famous personality. And he wants to hook up with a girl, classic storyline. And the girl is a real strict Christian who will only break the regs after she's married. You know, she would only agree to have sex with him if they're married. So he goes through this whole scheme where he gets his buddy, Jazz, to play a priest, and then take her to like a false sort of church place to get married. And the whole plan is working out beautifully, you know, so he's going to go and get married to this girl. And right before he marries her, she shows him like a family heirloom or locket or something that's passed down from one couple to another. And so she shows him this heirloom, and then he feels really bad, you know, because he just wants to sleep with her and then, you know, break up with her, you know, like this. So when she shows him that, he comes out and tells her the truth. And so she leaves him. I think she, like, slices his tires or something. So anyway, he has to call his Uncle Phil or something, I think, to come pick him up. So he tells him, you know, what he did. And Uncle Phil is furious, you know. He said, what type of sick person are you? How could you do such a crazy thing? And then most of them says, I'm a victim too. I'm a victim too. So his uncle said, how can you say you're a victim too? He said, I'm a victim of my imagination. It's a beautiful point, which is really a reality. That's exactly what's going on in the material world. Prahlad Maharaj says so much things too. He says so in his prayers in the Shingade, that we are also victims of our imaginations. We hear or we see and we start to fantasize. And we create a whole reality for ourselves in our fantasies, which we try to make reality at a certain point. So in that way, he was saying, I'm a victim too. I'm a victim of the mind. Krishna says so many things in the Bhagavad Gita that the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul, his enemy as well. Mandur hi atmanas tasya yenat mat vaiva, what is that? Yenat mat, yeah. Jita anatmanas tu chaturthe varte tatmaiva shatruvat. For one who has controlled the mind, then mind is friend. For one who has failed to control the mind, anatmanas tu chaturthe, then he is varte tatmaiva shatruvat. He is living with the greatest enemy. So we are victims of our imagination. We're doing something foolish. This is the situation. So that's a good story. It's funny. It's hilarious. There's a lot of little funny things from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, actually. All right, any other questions, comments, concerns? Anyone wants to bring up any other elements, points? The Yamadutas are very intelligent individuals, but they haven't covered anything transcendental. So that was their great mistake. And they haven't considered transcendental point. So that's where the Vishnudas will chastise them. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.